human and dairy, humanitarian assistance, specifically food aid to the southern countries of 92.2 million. And lastly, chairperson, cattle swine fever and foot and mouth disease in South Africa, an amount of 196.2 million was requested. It brings us to a total amount of 738.4 million. Approved and also tabled in Parliament for approval, chair lady, an amount of 300 million rand. If I can quickly refer to the personnel establishment and vacancy ratios in the department. On 1 April 2006, chairperson, the establishment of the department was 3,399, with vacancies of 869 or 25.6%. During 2006, with specific approval from the Director General in October 2006, we implemented the Organizational Development Committee with specific responsibilities to look at the abolishment slash auditation of posts, the prioritization of worksite investigations, as well as the prioritization of job evaluations. And with that in mind, Chairperson, we've tried to really implement establishment management in the department. And on 1st of April 2007, 3,191 was the establishment, with a vacancy rate of 567 or 17.8%. In other words, Chairperson, we brought it down from 25.6 on 1 April 2006 to 17.8% on 1 April 2007. The date as it is now, well, at the 1st of October, we got the establishment of 3,084, the vacancy is 442, and the percentage of the total establishment of 14.3. So we've roughly brought it down, well, more than 10%. And I've already mentioned, Chairperson, the establishment management. We do have problems with scarce skills as far as agricultural economists is concerned, veterinarians, and also agricultural engineers. Skills development and training programs in the department, Chairperson. We've got management development programs, three of them, emerging management development programs. That's for supervisory levels, level 7 and 8. Advanced management development programs, middle management, levels 9 to 12. And then executive management development, that's the old PSLDB courses, levels 13 to 16, so that is. Then courses available in the department, performance management, HIV/AIDS, problem solving and decision making, time management, presentation skills, customer care, computer skills, labor relations, report writing, firefighting, policy development, PFMA training, and mentorship and coaching. Chair, there's also learnerships available, specifically in HR management, business administration, and plant production. That goes for from grade 9 to grade 12, and then, of course, adult basic education and training. Chairperson, if I can refer to infrastructure and maintenance budget, we've received funds from Parliament for capital works, 31.2 million rand in the current year versus 20.6 million last year. And in property management, that's more or less rate taxes and leases, 38.8 million and versus 34 in the previous financial year. So in total, Chairperson, we have available in the Department for Infrastructure and Maintenance, 69 or let's say 70 million in the current year and 54.8 in the previous financial year. Of course, in terms of processes, all new capital projects and infrastructures are handled by the Department of Public Works, and then water, electricity, rates, and taxes and leases are paid by TPWD and then recovered from the department. And of course, any new accommodation needs of the department must be submitted to the Department of Public Works. Second last point, Chairperson, grants from the grant management. The just two different processes that transfer to the normal departmental public entities, specifically the Agricultural Research Council and the National Agricultural Marketing Council, receive their money via the vote of the Department of Agriculture and the total are managed in terms of the Ministry of the Public Finance Management Act. And then Chairperson transfer to the provinces is services such as land care, comprehensive agricultural support program, and agricultural disasters, which is done in terms of NORA on an annual basis. Lastly, Chairperson, just a reference to monitoring evaluation. We do have a dedicated directorate in the department, was established during 2001-2002, and tried to fine tune it since then. This unit monitors and evaluates the department's performance against targets set out in the annual strategic plan. These monitoring and evaluation Chairperson takes place quarterly during the department's quarterly review meetings. is also made available in a printed document, and then these four documents, or three documents, you relate, or four of them, are used as a basis for the annual report when we compile that and submit it to Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Then we move over to Linda Fitz.
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon. My name is Kathleen Mutsisi. I'm the Acting Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Land Affairs. I'll present using the hard copies because I can.
The Acting Chief Financial Officer. The DG. But I understood that the Acting DG.
I'm sorry, Chair. I think it's in the interest of speed and time. I should have said that I'm the acting DG of the Department of Land Affairs. My name is Joseph Gwanya. And I'm going to ask KC Mosisi, who is the acting chief financial officer for the Department of Land Affairs.
Yeah, it was important, DG, so that we know who is the leader of the delegation, whether it's the right person or not. Yes, thanks.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be presenting from the hard copy. I'm going to go straight to slide number 4, where we are showing our expenditure trends for the past 5 years, starting from 2002-03 up to the year that just passed to 2006-07, showing that we have spent 99.9% of our budget. The next slide talks to our spending in the current financial year. If you look at our increase in the budget, which went up to 5.6 million, our performance for the first 6 months of the year is on target, which is 50% of it compared to, when we compare it to the linear target. The next slide talks to our adjustment estimates that we submitted for 2007-2008. The department submitted a Treasury Committee memorandum requesting the following adjustments to the current budget. We requested 1 billion to augment the funding needs under Program 4. You'd recall in the previous year we gave the National Treasury 1 billion, and we had an understanding that this billion would be given back to the department when we were ready with implementation. We also requested 18 million for our information, communication and technology needs, 67 million for the state land audit and the finalization of the area-based plan. Safe to say, only 250 million was approved for the Rustenburg claim. The department is presently looking at reprioritizing within programs to fund some of the prioritized activities that were not funded. In terms of financial performance for the 2006-07 financial year, the department has achieved a record spending of 99.88% comparatively to 2005-06, where we had spent 73.8%. The 99.8 is against the adjusted appropriation of 3.7 3 billion for the year under review. 85% of the budget is allocated to restitution and land reform programs, and both programs managed to spend 100% of the capital budget under transfers to households. This commendable performance was however, dampened by the qualification that was received by the department. We received a qualification on asset management and rental revenue receivable from this land. Just to give a synopsis of the findings from the AG, for asset management, assets could not be located for physical verification. Asset register did not comply with the minimum requirements of the asset management guidelines, e.g. order numbers not recorded. And the root cause was the initial take-on of assets in 2002-2003 when we started establishing effective systems of managing assets. In that particular year, we didn't have a system, and that is our first year where we started barcoding and loading information on our board system that we had just acquired. But then we were dealing with information that was very stale. It was not easy to get those documents so that we can actually link some of these things that are needed in the register. There was also non-compliance with the departmental policy and procedures where over time, we have managed to start institutionalizing asset management. That is why most of the issues emanate from the first 2 years. If you look at our reports in the previous years, we've never had a qualification of asset management, because then the AG was only auditing us on the current, not going back to the opening balances. Interventions to address these problems. We have retrieved all the documents for 202, 203 that we could lay our hands on. 98% of those documents have been analyzed. A theoretical register has been produced. We've also engaged robustly with the offices to identify non-verified assets. Some of them are assets that were disposed before we had systems and processes in place. Some of them are assets that were obsolete, that the barcode fell off, and some were somehow broken. We've also capacitated the unit, because we had serious capacity in terms of the management of assets also in the department. And we have started now with enforcing compliance, making sure that managers take asset management as one of their core responsibilities. The other qualification is on rental revenue receivable from lease land. This qualification is received by the department for the second time, but we need to understand the context in which this qualification comes, because the exercise that we are busy with is not something that can be achieved within a year. There is still incomplete information in terms of the contracts that are out there. We have looked at this in two phases, where we said, let's take care of the lease land that we are managing as a department, and then we'll move on to take care of the lease that is managed, the lease contracts that are managed through the power of attorney by the provincial departments of agriculture. In the year under review, we've managed to clean up land that is managed by the department. We managed to even disclose the revenue and outstanding arrears from the contracts that we are managing, and the process of renewing most of those contracts have gone fairly well. The qualification emanated from the power of attorney land, where in terms of our plan, we face it to say we will be able to deal with power of attorney in 2008-09. We can't hide more than what we can chew, given the capacity that we have. Lack of a complete database, register of lease land, lack of debtors management system, inadequate contract management. Significant progress has been made to institutionalize the management of lease state land, and some of the key achievements are creating capacity in the PLRO offices, because that's where these contracts have to be managed. We've also developed a lease contract and debtors application system, which is now going through a user acceptance testing phase. We are also setting up systems for integrating revenue collection from provincial departments of agriculture. And all these processes are ongoing, and there is notable progress in terms of how our report is going to unfold for the 2007-08 financial year. I won't go into the medium-term policy priorities as captured in the slides, but I want to just touch on the challenges. Major challenges facing the department, and therefore contributing to the much debated slow pace of land reform, are to a large extent attributable to insufficient financial resources, high land prices, capacity constraints, lack of appropriate funding models. Providing training and technical support to land reform beneficiaries, which is critical for sustainable land and agrarian reform, and also having an integrated planning. We also have a challenges around restitution, the finalization of all the claims, managing risks inherent in the restitution and redistribution high drive, the need for organized agriculture must demonstrate more concrete commitment to land reform, increasing the culture of respect for land rights of vulnerable groups like labor tenants, occupiers, and other farm dwellers. Initiatives to address some of these challenges include the proactive land acquisition strategy that has been adopted by the department. Other initiatives include strengthening of the relations with the key stakeholders like organized agriculture and NGOs for post settlement. There is also an alignment of the implementation plans with the Department of Agriculture for improved timely provision of agricultural support, as it is seen in the joint presidential priority that we are implementing as a department. There is also a presidential priority of using the 2.5 million that we are jointly implementing in the Department of Agriculture. Well, the review of grant models to enable a better means of providing land to the beneficiaries, facilitating the vesting of state land to state and enabling an environment for restitution and redistribution, revised delegations and increased capacity for the restitution and redistribution program, discussions with National Treasury with regard to the development of a strategy towards setting a high land price. I'll jump the risk assessment and go to the planning assumptions. As we plan, the assumptions taken into consideration include that the fact that government will provide a reasonable budget, there will be a robust effort to source relevant capacity, there will be strong partnering with relevant stakeholders. We will also engage robustly through area-based planning, provision of training, and bringing in strategic partners. In terms of the new policy options that we have requested as a department, it's the funding that is needed for the presidential priority, which seeks to redistribute 5 million hectares of prime agricultural land in the next 3 years, the settlement of 5,279 remaining restitution claims in the next 3 years, capacity building through the phased implementation of the new organizational structure by creating and feeding approximately 1,221 posts, scaling up of information, communication, and technology to respond to the increasing number of users, business requirements, and technology deficiencies. The four options that have been submitted, in terms of financial implications, redistribution of 5 million for the acquisition of land for 2008-09, it's 18.6 billion, 2009-10, 20, and 2010, it's 21 billion. Settlement of restitution, we submitted an option of 1.2 billion, and the outer year 1.5. The filling of new posts and the concomitant operating costs for the proposed new structure, we've requested 492 million for the first year, and because this is cumulative over years, that's why it's showing this type of budget. And the scaling up of ICT, 109 million 64, scaling down as our ICT stabilizes. All in all, what we have submitted to Treasury is 20.5 billion for 08-09, 20-23.5, 24.4. It should also be noted that at the time of preparing these inputs, the conceptual document on the presidential priority was, the draft was already presented, and plans were already initiated in the department to push and make sure that by the time the allocation is made, there is an implementation plan towards achieving this goal. The indicative baseline, currently excluding the options that we have shown, and this is also what is captured in the ENE, is that the department has got 5.9 billion for 2008-09, 5.1 for 09-10, and we have 5.5 billion for 2010. These are still indicative because we haven't received a final allocation from National Treasury. I'm going to jump the following slides because basically here we are trying to show the allocation of the budget per province in the next 3 years. The slide showing the bar graph basically tries to illustrate the disjuncture between the budget allocated and the hectares that the department can actually deliver. If you look from 2002-03 up to 2006-07, the blue bar there shows the baseline, and the purple bar shows the number of hectares that the department could actually achieve over the 5 years, and this is just for restitution, for redistribution, without before we can even include the hectares that have been delivered through the restitution program. The next slide is more a comprehensive budget proposal, including the policy options that I have spoken to. In terms of infrastructure and maintenance budget, We don't keep a big budget here. It basically relates to our maintenance of building, largely payments that we make to public works. We have proper internal controls in place for ensuring that there is value for money. This includes constant reconciliation of payments and quality of control exams. Systems for transfers and grant management, yes, we do comply with the TFLA. We have delegations because we acquire a land, we spend quite a lot of money. Under restitution, we have also brought on board quality assurers who will assist the commissioner with regards to risk and financial management. We have an information management under restitution where information in terms of land purchase, beneficiaries and commitments are properly recorded. We have effective control measures and segregation of duties, and payments are done centrally at national office. For the grants under redistribution, we also load projects on bus. Grants are put through provincial committees. We do have delegations to land reform directors. Payments are done centrally at national office. We use the safety net from Treasury to make sure that we don't pay to incorrect service providers. But then where we transfer to other municipalities, we've got agency agreements, and we do it also through DORA. In terms of vacancies, the next slide shows our vacancy rate is at the end of 2006-2007, which is almost 30%. We have a total establishment of 4,772. The number of posts filled is 3,353. And at the end of the financial year, we had vacant posts of about 1,419. But the story behind these numbers, I think it's better explained in the slide following this one, where we are clearly demonstrating that as of March 2007, we had 1,186 vacant posts. We made new appointments, 425. Internal promotions, 375. Effectively, total posts filled by October 2007, 800. But then, if you take into consideration that internal promotion basically means we have created 375 vacancies again, this is the bottomless bucket that we normally talk about, because if you look at the experience that you need in land reform, the experience that you need in redistribution, it's not something that you can easily acquire at the university. You need experiential learning to actually be able to be an effective implementer. So the challenge is that you find that it is our own staff who have been groomed at the lower level who rise up to fill in the vacant posts and create more posts at the lower level. We also have depth 9 resignations. Resignations include transfers to other departments. Almost 80% of this 168 refers to transfers, officials who have moved to join other departments. Retirement 26 and dismissal 5. Now, the new balance of vacant posts goes back to 969. Effectively, we have only filled in 217. Skills development. To try and curb this problem, the department has engaged in a number of initiatives. We have internship programs that are running throughout in all our components. We have a bursary scheme. GLA has 168 prospective bursary holders studying degrees and diplomas in geomatic surveys, cartography, town and regional planning at various universities and technicons. 22 diploma and 6 degree students are to complete their qualification at the end of this year and be placed in branch LPI in 2008. We have also embarked on another robust initiative of bringing on board graduates who will be placed against the establishment. They will be trained through a practical training program and receive practical experience and assign a four-year contract. Training is done by GLA in partnership with different tertiary institutions. To date, I can safely say 21 graduates commenced indeed on the 1st of October 2007, and other branches will follow in a staggered approach. All graduates have been allocated members. This is just one of the initiatives where we are trying to plant our own trees to deal with this bottomless bucket that is challenging us. The other human resource development strategy that we have is training of our beneficiaries, because we realize that one of the key challenges is capacitating our beneficiaries to be able to have sustainable projects. an MOU with the University of Fort Hare through the partnership training program for land reform beneficiaries in the Eastern Cape has been developed, and training for beneficiaries will commence in November. Consultation with stakeholders and beneficiaries in all places, in all provinces, are continuing to develop a skills development framework for all the land reform beneficiaries. The department also is currently conducting a skills audit so that we can identify the gaps and be able to develop and also make sure that officials are correctly placed in the area where they are operating. In terms of monitoring and evaluation, we do have a unit that is responsible for monitoring and evaluation. We are in the process of capacitating that unit and making sure that it is fully equipped to monitor performance throughout the year as we report. Sure, I think I'm out there.
Thanks very much. Members, it's time for questions. I will start with Honorable Schneerman, and whilst he asks his question, I'll then note down the list of other members who want to ask questions. Honorable Schneerman, can you, before you start, I would be flexible that you can ask questions to either of the two. Yeah. And even with the two departments, you will note down the questions that are relevant to your department. Honorable Sinema? Honorable members from the other committee, sorry, you have the right to ask questions. From Agriculture and Land Affairs, you've got the right to ask questions. Honorable Sinema?
Thanks, Comrade Chairperson, and thanks to the two departments for their presentations and the information provided. My questions that I'm going to ask now are really directed at both departments. If I can just start, if I look at the adjusted estimates of national expenditure documents for both departments, I am picking up that there are considerable savings that are being recorded due to vacant posts. Now, I know that you've touched on some of it here now in the latest presentation, but could we get an indication as to what impact this is having on the ability of land affairs and agriculture to spend, and what impact is it going to have, particularly in terms of the allocations that are projected over the MTF period? Are we going to have an inability to spend? And I ask that particularly because, again, in the adjusted estimates of national expenditure document relating to agriculture, it tells us that in the first 6 months of this current financial year, only 27.91% of the adjusted appropriation has been spent. And that worries us. That would worry us. And I would like to get some comments on that. Perhaps this document is wrong, I don't know. But that just would send alarm bells. The same would apply to land affairs. Land affairs, according to this document, has only spent, I think it's 46 or 47% thereabouts. If we could comment on that as well, as to whether that is an indication that we were lacking to spend. Chair, then, just in terms of the presentation by Land Affairs, and as far as land restitution is concerned, they've given us, we're told that they must finalise these claims over the next 3 years. I want to just get an understanding as to whether, in fact, the allocations that are being projected over the MTF are going to actually enable us to finalise those claims. Could we just get an indication of that? Thanks, Chair. I'll ask some more later.
Thanks, Honourable Member. Honourable Dambusa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's just an additional question from what Honourable Schneerman has raised. on the issue of failing. We are very much aware that departments have got that opportunity to do environment of 8%. But when we are looking at this document that was shown by Honorable Schneeman, really, to me, it sounds very strange. If the department could not budget for the issues, I think they should have been budgeted for. For instance, chasing of vehicles, the maintenance, the licenses. Those issues are there. You should have budgeted for them instead of taking money from, instead of shifting money from the other programs. For instance, there's a lot, the machinery. To me, it sounds very strange. This trend happens in this becoming case and us. But secondly, on the very same document, there is a clause that says based on a history of understanding certain directories budgets were cut on the very same document from the National Treasury, which means that even though there are budget cuts that have been done, it's because this department is normally having the very same, it's not one directory, it's a directory. So it means really we don't have hope that this policy statement that was issued 2 days ago, the department is going to accomplish the objectives that are there for this current year. And based on the human resource, I would like to know if the department does have a human resource plan in place. And we have heard that 80% of the staff is leaving the department. We would like to know what are the cushion conditions for that. And what are the plans that are there to curb this problem or this challenge? Yeah, we understand that the department is busy with the internship programs and the sector, but if I was listening properly, it's just open. I don't know how I'm going to monitor the department as the joint budget, because once what they have given to us today, we have to make follow-up of what they have said to us. But I don't know how I'm going to monitor it, because it's just open, there's no target set to say for this period we would have been filled these vacancies. And there's also a challenge of the staff skills that is experienced by the department. I don't know what is their plan to overcome that situation. Thanks for that. This goes to both departments.
Thanks, Honorable Dambusa, Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. The agriculture sector refers to land care. How effective is this land care issue? And when it comes to, I think it might have to do also with both support for agricultural, the emerging farmers, support for them, which also goes to post-settlement support. How effective are these, and how roughly how many beneficiaries are there? Have you followed up to see that you still have the same numbers in this support in this project, or is that the money and the support has just the beneficiaries have just blown out. They prefer to pass it from monitoring system. I think it goes to the two departments. And I would like to know, because you mentioned the restitution, finalization of the restitution process by 2007 and 2008. Exactly how far are you in this program to make sure that it will be finalized as you have stated? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable Fox.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the two departments. What doesn't seem to come through very clearly, you know, the Chairperson, we got to, what came through to me at any point was that the departments both require more money for very specific reasons. This seemed to be coming through all the time. Now, normally one would not worry that much about it, except when one asks for more money in the face of underspending on a previous track record. So I won't repeat what has already been said, but I'm just trying to get an understanding of the logic. One of the things in agriculture now, which came through, I think it's agriculture, if my memory serves me right, yes, was the reference here to the food biosecurity and that kind of thing, you know, how you were putting all this together, and that the point made was that this is fully under control and you've spent so many extra million and that's well managed, the risks are taken account of. And yet in previous years, we've learned when we come to the end of the year that this has not been the case and more funds are required. Now, I do understand about the classical swine and the various other diseases we are getting, so I'm not referring to that in particular. I'm referring to the risk management plan that needs to be put forward in this regard when one talks about something being well managed and contained. So what do we mean by contained if there is that problem? For example, last year when the funds were allocated, it reached only 35,000 instead of the 40,000 targeted people. You know, what is the plan in that regard? Is the plan to cut fall short? The other problem that was raised was, again, with respect to financial resources, insufficient with respect to training, specific training. And one of the training programs that was mentioned specifically, again, I think it was in agriculture, was the extension offices and so on. Great shortages in that regard, the training and so on. Now, my question is this. Every year, we've been referring to the capacity in that regard, in that particular program. Are you now saying that last year you were able to present a strategic plan, business plan to Treasury, which motivated sufficiently on the past track record as to what you require and what you've got in place to utilize? Because in my own experience, when it comes to training, it's not simply a matter of extra financial resources. It's a matter of trying to be far more innovative. You can go to other countries in Africa where they don't have our financial resources, but they've got extension officers who are in the field doing a lot of good work in that regard. There's a point about the presidential program made. I think it's on the land reform one. But so many thousands of hectares that have got to be transferred and so on. Now, we also here link the land reform, we have the land restitution. Now, I know they are two different concepts, but some of the points being made there link up to the land reform. The land reform is highly linked to your extension offices and being able to process and to also access them. And legislation will go through to enable the purchase thereof. But on the other side, you make no mention of the problems on our side, if you want to put it that way, of claimants themselves not being able, and I think that is the land side, being able to take advantage of the land that is accessed for them, that is made available due to a lot of other legal problems and disputes among the claimants, not actually the people that we purchased it from. Now, for the last 3 years, that's been raised. What has now been done as we take this forward? And what other measure have you got besides calling for more money to try and speed up the land claims? Because a lot of the land claims are not simply a matter of money. A large percentage is, I agree with you. But we hear of your undercapacity in the department, which has been referred to in the questions here, and which you referred to yourself. What are you doing about trying to obtain people at a high school level and bringing them up? At a university, at a technicon, at the unemployed level, there are people in my own constituency with technical degrees, agric diplomas. They can't get jobs in your department, and I'm hearing today you've got all these jobs available. Where are you advertising? You're advertising in Vereeniging and the Vaal. Where are you advertising? In the Northern Cape. And tell me, where is the Rickster spelt? I thought it was in the Northern Cape. Could be wrong, but my geography is not that good. Is it near Alex Call? But if it's near Alex Call, and if it is in any way linked to Alex Call, who is footing this bill? The Department of Public Enterprises or yourself? Because we just heard this morning they're putting in a lot of money. Now I'm wondering who's putting in the money.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Member. I've noted Honorable Chikunga.
Honourable Member, please speak into the mic.
Mine is based on the vacancy rate. The Department, I think, of Land Affairs reported that of the total number of people that resigned, 80% moved to other departments. I just want to check if the department, if not both, do have retention strategies. If they do, how effective are they? And also, Chairperson, I would want to check as to particularly the Department of Agriculture as to how it monitors the money that is transferred to provinces. And I want to link that to the base for my, what are they achieving out of the budget that they have and that they utilize. Thank you. They spend. Thank you.
Honorable Member, Honorable Koloni.
Thanks, Chairperson. Department of Agriculture.
Yeah,
Agriculture. I just want to get a sense. Out of that classification figure, that amount is it? Does it mean was that amount spent for treatment or for compensation? What is it? But I also, in fact, actually need to know what is happening with those people who lost those seats that were. I know at some time with agriculture, some farmers were compensated after the mouse fever. What was it? Mouse fever? Yeah, foot and mouth. Yeah. Land. I just want to check here. I also need the Regional Land Claims Office. I only see 2, 4, 6, 7 provinces. I don't see Northwest on that page. It's Northwest and the Northern Cape. Does it imply that the no longer have problems in terms of land claims? Thank you.
Thanks for this. I'll kick off with the Department of Agriculture. I note here the adjustment estimates that 250 million rand has been transferred to GIS for communication purposes. Can I be informed whether you allow your sister department, Land Affairs, to piggyback on these resources? Specifically, to address, among other issues, what you usually call group dynamics that is happening within those land beneficiaries. While on this thing called group dynamics, maybe at some time we've got to call it by its proper name so that we don't give it the respectable term it is. So that in future we just say there are people who are indulging in conflicts and disputes and who are most of the time basking in the sun while they should be working on their fields. We don't just term it dynamics. I also read here, also in the adjustment estimate, especially the one, the special adjustment estimate, the capital injection that has been directed at the land bank. Will that bank at some other time assist people, especially those who are land restitution beneficiaries, instead of just focusing on commercial farmers? On the deeds office, we see here in our presentation there are some figures on a number of people who are employed in that section. Does it really represent actual capacity in that office and not merely numbers of people? I'm asking this question in the light of the constraints that office experienced in the recent past. And with the booming economy, I can imagine that there are still too many applications that are coming into that office. Does that office cope? Will we not be experiencing the delays that prevailed in the past years? Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. Honorable Mshaloha.
Thanks, Chair. I think the aircon isn't working right in this hall. It's been a little chilly. just a few questions, Chair. I think this matter of the vacancy rate, you know, we've got to pay special attention to it. On both departments, but especially Land Affairs, where the rates seem to be much higher, especially given the kind of challenges that we have in terms of land reform. I think through the chair, what we've got to do is to instruct them that next year when they're paid for the portfolio committee, there's got to be a sense that what I say is acceptable level with regard to this particular question. But as you look at it, you've got violence or surpluses arising out of the inability to fill the funded pool. The other issue has got to do with the redistribution of 30% of agricultural land by 2014 to previous cities. Well, if the statistics I have are correct, if from 1994 to date, that is in 13 years, we have only redistributed less than 4%, what makes us confident that in the next 7 years we'll deliver on 25%? And that is related as well to the question of settling all the claims by the 31st of March next year. What sort of confidence do we have that those targets will be met? The issue of skills, I don't hear anybody talking about agricultural colleges that we used to have. From the point of view of capitalization and all of that, given the sort of challenges that you're talking to in terms of the lack of skills, nobody's talking about that particular point. The other issue that I want to raise is an agroeconomic question about the fact that if you've got agriculture contributing just 3% of the GDP, are we saying that we are performing at the optimum in terms of our contribution to the GDP? And what are the things that you think that need to be done from the point of view of supply side measures? Do we have a strategy to deal with those? The last point is about the post-settlement support. Because, Mr. Chair, it's much easier to chase the number of hectares. And we can give you a performance bonus for that. But the issue is, what then happens post that settlement? Are we able to make an assessment as to what is the impact of all of this? Are the farms that have given to our people operating at the maximum? Or are they on the downward scale? I'm raising that from the point of view of food security. So I'm saying that Chairperson, perhaps even this particular point, we've got to have a clear, a well-articulated, post-settlement support strategy for both the departments. Because we should not set poverty traps for people and for the country. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Nimba. Honorable Nkunu?
Will you please turn the mic towards you? Are there policy options? There is the program of extension and advisory services, which I think would be good because the advisors would be going to the people. And then one of the services mentioned, there isn't something that they could go out with to the communities because extension officers are going to go out to the people and teach them something as well. Home economics has not been included. Yes, we are talking about HIV/AIDS. We are talking about orphans. We are talking about schools that need to have gardens and which are also having feeding systems. So I think home economics should be considered. Has that been considered?
Thanks, Honorable Member.
home economics. It would have been nice if the PG education was here. It would have been very nice. I just want to piggyback on some of the questions of members. One thing, in your responses, it's clear to the committee that TFMA allows you by remains 8% and not disputable. But maybe at some stage the committee will have to make recommendations to National Treasury. Because this 8%, the trend is that people will shift and shift and say that we are within 8%. So that is a trend, and we know you are provided for that. I wouldn't say it's an escape corner, but it's of concern to the committee. In your post-settlement, members have been asking about it, post-restitution settlement. It should be clear to this committee. What exactly are the two departments doing to ensure that those hectares that you have reported you were able to achieve are not reporting funds? Because most of them, I know in the Northwest Province, game farming is very popular. Eastern Cape, game farming is very popular. And my co-chair person on my right has indicated that we are concerned with food security, while a lot of hectares is going for food, for game farming. What is the department doing? And how do you monitor that these beneficiaries will end up utilizing the land for food security and for even economic development, not necessarily game funding, because that is the concern to the parliament. Also, as I look at your trends, previous year's spending trends, I'm not even surprised that when it comes to capital spending, it shoots up. You spend more than what you budgeted to spend for. And when it comes to current spending, where you've got to pay personnel, you spend less than what was budgeted for, and even far lower below the adjusted estimate. But when it comes to capital spending, you even spend more than what was provided for in the adjusted estimate. But I've seen the proof in the document that you take all those, you buy new vehicles which were not budgeted for, you buy computers, you buy new environments to buy computers which are capital assets, new cars which are capital assets, so that you'll be able to spend. And it's clear to us where does this money go, but we need to know why should it be the case, because you are supposed to spend, to budget for this. But also, Minister talks about cutting frills, like many conferences, and other frills, workshops, continuous workshops, whereby departments would have less, the officials or employees would have less days to spend on assisting people and more on conferences and workshops. And amongst the environment, I think I've seen twice or thrice, where you have shifted funds to conferences and attending workshops. So, can you clarify as why is that the case? And how are you going to trim these frills so that you spend on critical issues? The other one, I think, Honorable Mokhalo, if it's you, I'm not sure exactly who asked that question. You know, it seems there's a college strike in the department. College strike. What I mean is that the department do not want to utilize colleges or revive colleges, either agriculture, either teaching, either nursing, either whatever. They don't want to revive them so that this issue of lack of skills can be addressed. And also that Honorable Fox has indicated that we've got so many graduates who are unemployed. And sometimes in these people have been trained in the skills that you require, but because they don't have the experience, they are not employed. And where will they get experience from if they don't get it from government? Where will they get it from? And why are these people every year they are going out into the street, increasing the number of those who are unemployed? But if there is a problem, but I think you can negotiate with the sharing. It's possible you've got the matters, you've got the financial matters, you can negotiate. It's not necessary that colleges would, universities would say that they can't change the curriculum. You need to drive them, and we need to know what are the problems, what are you doing with this, and that, I mean, graduates who are roaming the streets, increasing the number of criminals because they are frustrated, they can't get employed. Finally, can you tell us, over the medium term, with what there's going to be more allocation for skills, more allocation for increasing food security so that we can have even export more agricultural products? What is your capacity? What is your capacity and what will be your contribution? And when can we get, if you don't have sufficient information, when can both committees, the portfolio committee and the joint budget committee, get exactly that by the end of the next financial year, this will be your achievement? Because we are very concerned that we've got many people who are becoming criminals because they are frustrated, they can't get employed. We've got many people, they are running short of skills, but what are you doing to ensure that those skills we can have people, besides the fact that they can be taken up by overseas governments? But we can't just give up. We can't just give up. This is a developmental state. Agriculture is very important. The issue, the land question, is a hot issue, which if you are not addressing it, can give us serious problems in the future. So can you respond to those things? And remember that we have the capacity as Parliament to influence national treasure in funding over the alternative. But we must be sure of capacity to absorb and deliver. Let's start with agriculture.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the questions. We will answer in terms of the questions that are raised. So those that are relating to finances, we give them to the Chief Finance Officer, and those that are relating to other areas, I'll either handle them myself or hand them to the DDG FSP to deal with. We may, Madam Chair, request that some of the questions we provide a written response where we might not be able to give it offhand and accurately.
So, DG? First one about Mujamara Hotoku. He who eats last is the king. The DG can't eat before the subordinates eat. So the subordinates must first eat, then the DG will eat last, so that the DG can deal with tough questions. So you are not going to start, it's your juniors who are going to start.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would then, within that guideline, request the CFO and the DDG to take the issues that are relevant to the members' questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll respond to the question, Chair, as I will write it down from a financial point of view. First of all, the question on the 20%, 27% spending by the
Just hold. I don't know, you know.
Honorable Fox is complaining that from time to time you start to go down, and it's important for all members to share. So if you can raise your voice, and especially because, you know, it's a heavy voice.
That's
and a heavy voice is not sometimes easy to hear.
It's constant, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, I can't comment. I can't comment, but it's important that you raise your voice.
The first question, Chairperson, on the 27% spending on page of the page 111 of the adjustment estimate, which states specifically expenditure in the first 6 months of 07-08 was 968 million, or 27% of the adjusted appropriation. Chairperson, we've received the 700 million plus the 488 million as new money just by Parliament, and this is what taken into has been taken into account in this calculation. The 968 million was close to 50% at the end of September of the original budget, which has been spent. This money is only now being allocated, and in terms of parliamentary procedure, if the President signs the act, we will only be able to start spending in December on the adjustment allocation. So I think I've answered your question. It's new money allocated while we were not wishing to spend them up to the first 6 months of this year. As far as the question on the environment for vehicles is concerned, for instance, we've utilized savings on vacancies. Jefferson, keep in mind, if somebody resigns, the post became vacant, and it can be vacant between 3, 4, 5 months. That money is automatically on the salary, not from the salary side, not spent. So we try to utilize it for something else. This specific case happened in my branch, corporate services. We are responsible for the department, for the pool, the vehicle pool of the department. It's about 500 to 600 cars. I do normally not budget for the purchase of new cars. What we do if from the branch society our vacancies in the year, we utilize savings on the salary to buy new vehicles in that specific year. This is what specifically happened here. The question on the licenses, was 8,000 and just a correction of the numbers, Chairperson. It was not budgeted for. It was just maybe, as I said, a correction of what happened in the past. The question of the retention policy, if you exist in the department, although, Chairperson, if you want to resign or go to greener fields, a retention policy by time off or whatever the case might be will not hold officials back if they want to leave for better money. The question on the classical swine fever, compensation or payment in this regard, if you just explain, the province is responsible for the campaign. The National Department of Agriculture, in terms of the Animal Diseases Act, are in charge, but the province has been appointed as the agent. They do it, they pay from their budget, they claim from the National Department. Payment is twofold. First of all, it's compensation to the farmers if the animals are killed. In this instance, it was an exercise of putting the animals down. So compensation is paid on the one hand, and then on the other hand, we utilize officials from all the 9 provinces, the police, the SANDF, etc., to help us with roadblocks in so forth. So we are paying overtime, we're paying S&T, etc., to the official side of the campaign, as I said, as well as compensation to the farmers if the animals were put down. Chairperson, the question by the co-chair on the 250,000 rand that was transferred to GCIS, is the way I understand it was a government-wide communication project, and all the partners were just requested to add or to assist with this campaign, and from that GCIS approached the Department of Agriculture. We paid 250,000 rand over to that department as a gesture of goodwill. Chair, I think for a moment that is all from the finance side. Thank you.
Before we take the next person to respond, can we just break for 10 minutes and press 3? Yeah. If someone can help, people are complaining that temperature is very low in this room. It's cold. No, it's cold. Low temperature.
I was actually running late because I came from
the late.
Thank you. I was early for your meeting.
Thank you. Which health club is it? I don't know.
I didn't take calls.
Another question that could be directed straight to National Treasurer, but I'll give them the opportunity once we have finished. But can I, I'll give you the opportunity.
No, I just want to check what the deadline is. Well, I still have to catch up the flight. I don't have an international airport right now.
I'll respond to, I should have responded during tea. Let me make it clear to the PGs. Some of, actually, I would request that in your responses, give us responses that will not make members ask follow-up questions. Because already in the first response, I have follow-up questions. So I'm afraid that we will end up having follow-up questions because members are not satisfied with your responses. For instance, we asked about using money that was supposed to be used for personnel. You use it for vehicles. And we are having a problem as a committee with that kind of arrangement. We confirm to us that yes, we do use it. When we are concerned with you using that money for capacity of the department to acquire vehicles. The other thing you refer to resignations that people are going for greener pasture. You know, we are not convinced because the work environment. People, even if they are not wealthy, but the work environment is very important. Money is not necessarily the only condition that can make people to stay in a department. We want to know exactly what measures have you put in place to ensure that you can retain your staff. Not necessarily financial, getting more money so that you can pay them. The work environment is the one that, at the end of the day, somebody's happy that I'm from work. I'm satisfied that I have done my work for today. But if the working environment is not right, people will end up being frustrated and decide to leave to other departments, not because of greener pastures. And we've been doing oversight work. We know where some people decide to remain in the department because they get work satisfaction. So that's what's important. So the people don't move from one department to another thinking that they will get the better working conditions or the working environment in those departments. So this one of people going for greener pastures is a usual response, and we don't want it. What to execute? What are the measures that we have? So I'm just making a plea that let us not respond with the common answers that you always give to the portfolio committee, that you always give to the ministers during questions. We want things that are creative, that are new, to ensure that the current problems that we have are going to be resolved. So, DG, the questions that were responded to have not been responded to, that were thought to be responded to, they haven't been responded to. So can you assist us in that regard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am assuming I will be handling your request within the Zona Day. So, if with your permission, then I will allow the other officials to proceed.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I hope I will follow the guidance given by the Chair and not respond in a manner that elicits more responses. I'll handle three questions. My name, by the way, is Vangile Siti. I'm the DGG, Vector Services and Partnerships. I will handle three questions. One related to land care and post-settlement support, And my understanding of the question was, how effective is this? In responding to this, I think we have to admit that at the portfolio committee and at the select committee, the same question was asked with respect to the impact of these programs. And we did promise that we will go back and we will structure an impact assessment on these programs. However, we did indicate that in our annual report, we had actually presented the outcome. And I think the members at those sittings did articulate their understanding that this is what we had given them, but there was a need to actually look at the impact. At one of those sittings, I did just give an anecdotal report in terms of the impact of the support services that we had given to the National Wheat Growers Association. And we actually quantified the output in terms of the support that was given, helping the farmers to move from earning 100 rand to 17,000 to 30,000. But as promised, we did say we'll get back with those responses, and I think that's the promise that we are making now.
Sorry, just before you continue. So are you saying that you're still going to provide the portfolio committee and the select committee with that information in future, or is it available, but you will go to them? Because if it's available, you also want to benefit. But if it will be available in future, you must indicate so that you would expect that future. We can give you even the time frame.
Thank you, Chair. The example that I was making is available and other examples. But what I was saying was that we had not actually gone out to do a comprehensive assessment of the impact of our programs. But we do have examples where we can provide, and as I indicated, we did promise the select and the portfolio committee that we'll provide this to them. And we can do that with this particular committee too. If I may, I will then move to the question on extension, and I think the question was saying what is in place. But I would like to start by saying that the issue of extension we addressed because ourselves together with Treasury went through a process of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Review to identify the spending trends in the provinces and to also see what the challenges were. And one of the major challenges that came through was that of extension. So out of that process, we engaged with the provinces, we articulated what we call the norms and standards for extension, and we have a document that we have provided to the members, particularly in the portfolio committee. And out of those norms and standards, we also did a study that profiled extension in the provinces. That profile gave us information that articulated where extension officers are, what they are doing, and what their challenges were. And some of the challenges, and I think they are reflected in our option that we presented to Treasury, was that although they were trained, some were not adequately trained, there were certain areas of training that were required, and hence us coming together with the provinces to say, let's put an option through to Treasury so that we can assist to upgrade the skills level of the extension officers. Also understanding that we actually need more extension officers. What we said to Treasury, and it's borne out by the study that we did, was that essentially we have only one third of extension components required to meet internationally accepted norms of about 80% of our current extension officers not being adequately trained. So that explains that part of it. Just to conclude by saying we are working with the provinces to ensure that we have adequate extension officers deployed that are trained and that are well resourced, and that has been acceptable. Just to also indicate that as part of our attempt to also get to know what is happening in other countries, we now have an exchange program with Kenya, where our extension officers have been there, the Kenyans will also be coming here so that we can share experiences and begin to improve on how we do things. coming to the question on agricultural colleges, this is also another area that has dogged us for some time. The DG has better institutional memory on this one, but I know that at the time when provincialization happened, you had colleges. Did I say colleges? Okay. I had expected in my head. We had colleges that remained within the provinces, and one college that got assigned to the Department of Agriculture nationally. We then moved to look, because this is what was required, to look at the governance framework for agricultural colleges. And I think through time we've engaged with the Department of Education since they declared colleges as further education and training colleges. And we have agreed now, and this is something that we were discussing with the HODs yesterday, that the colleges that are within the authority of the provinces will remain there. The one that is within the authority of the National Department will remain there, but we have opened the scope for discussion with the provinces if at some point they feel that some of the colleges should move to us. But I think most importantly is about what has been discussed, that we want to move these colleges into centers of excellence. And I think we've, to some measure, achieved that with the Grootfontein Agricultural Development Institute. And at some point, I think we should invite the members to visit Grootfontein Agricultural Development Institute. The example of the National Growers Association is also a demonstration of what a college can do for emerging farmers in collaboration with the private sector. So we've agreed that we'll move in the direction of centers of excellence, and I think critically the two DGs of agriculture and education have reached an agreement around the strategy that we have proposed. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. I have four questions to respond to, the last one being the one that Madam Chair, you handed over to me to speak on to try to fill up the gap left by my comments. Colleagues' comments earlier on. I'm answering the one on agro-economic by the portfolio chair, and it was really saying, are we performing in regard to the GDP share of the sector of 3%? Are we performing optimally? If I could answer, Madam Chair, this question and answer it through the voice of the advisors that the cabinet had set through what is called now the Harvard Group of Economists, the answer seems to be no, not optimally. And they actually went on to indicate to cabinet that if, as a whole, in terms of the economy, we're operating optimally. Optimally here, they've gone on to even indicate that if you were to take South Africa and compare it with the countries at the same level where we are, their answer was that if we were to operate at the level that those and other countries are performing, we'd be having something like 6 million additional jobs in our country. Now, that could be distributed across in terms of the various sectors. They went on to indicate that three key sectors, and these are given in the documents here in terms of outlining how they are performing, namely mining, agriculture, and manufacturing, are not performing to their optimal level, and in fact agriculture is dropping. Although in terms of the figure here, I can't remember where exactly that is,
we have indications that it has begun to bottom up and then it's beginning to rise. But the answer is certainly no, and I'm just using exactly this team because their work in many respects has filtered into the speech that was read by Minister of Finance in as far as the macroeconomic level performance. And also, ma'am, is that when they began to say which are the areas and what are the strategies, again, out of 21 recommendations that are before Cabinet, there are some which are beginning to be taken, but some are at an industrial level, some are even at a shelter level. And they're very clear in some of the areas. And ma'am, you just made it into a comment at the beginning of this meeting as to whether I was around the parliamentary building. I had been just over Klabo discussing with the export sector of the fruit where South Africa is among the most leading competitive countries in terms of fruit. And we're discussing exactly this element in terms of how could we up our performance where we are most competitive in terms of exactly this advice that is given by the Harvard Group. I hope this just gives a flavor of the areas, but as I said, the group of Harvard economists has given 21 recommendations ranging from macroeconomy, trade, tariffs, agro-logistics in terms of infrastructure, human resource. It's a series of things that are very helpful for the country as a whole in terms of economy and specific sectors. And we have set ourselves to follow as much as possible those that we could pick up from that level to increase and place ourselves at an optimal level. To close up on this issue, Madam Chair, that if indeed we were to operate at this level, we're likely to raise the GDP share of our sector from 3, probably between 9 and 2, probably between 9 and 12, if we were to operate at that level. Even without adjusting, because sometimes we are too narrow in our definition. In some countries, agriculture would include forest, fishing, and environment. But even without doing so, we would operate around that level. The next issue is the issue around the cutting of the frills. I just overheard Madam Chair, the officials here saying they would welcome the suggestion, but what exactly and how would we exactly operationalize the issues such as workshop, conferences, and the hotel and travel? Because some of them, in terms of our work, consulting with the stakeholders, which is her primary function, we've had, as I said, to go to Rabo and discuss with the vital partners in as far as the export is concerned. But I think we take the general trust of Minister Emmanuel in as far as ensuring that we trim onto this. And I think our finance people, together with the others that would be working with them, would be issuing out some new instructions within our department in as far as how to engage in a more responsible, but in a more positive way to the recommendation by Minister of Finance. The last one on my list, Madam Chair, and I'll seek guidance on the other one that was asked about what achievements can we say regarding the capacity and food security as far as skills, because I'm afraid, ma'am, I don't want to overshoot in terms of the question. I didn't get it well. In terms of the work environment, the question that you raised, our retention. Of course, the members would be aware about the recent EU situation where it has come up with this blue book. And I think internationally it has been ushered a new phenomena where the skills across the world are going to be competed for in the most rigorous ways, and the likelihood of any country, let alone a sector, holding, retaining, and recruiting is going to be governed almost at the same level that we are now having the price of commodities going. And it's going very, very tough. And that's just an opening statement, and governments have come up with horror to that statement of the EU in terms of the blue card phenomena. But it's a phenomena that seems, from our reading, that is going to be with us for some years to come. And as I say, the implications are that those that are trained, unless you hold them with various mechanisms, including indeed the issue of the retention work environment, the pricing factor is going to come and dictate very, very heavily. We do not as yet have a very specific one, but we could indicate here to the members that just this year, to retain one very critical official in the department who was at deputy director level, we've had to retain him with the salary level of the chief director. And this just goes on to underscore the element of what we are faced with here. We lost another one who just couldn't be retained because he was moving from a deputy director level salary, and he was saying we should pay well below, above the director general's level. We are not, in essence, opposed to that, because the DPSA is now giving a guideline of saying management levels should be on one side, and then experts and professional levels should be on the other. But we've not yet had a guideline which is very helpful coming from the DPSA, and we are really working, awaiting a more clearer and a more effective means of how, at a professional level, you should not find a case where if you want to progress upward, you've got to enter the management. It should be possible, Madam Chair and members, that you should be having actually a professional who could, on the basis of the professional standing and their expertise worldwide, and they could be retained and they could earn well beyond what the DGs are earning. So that then you're beginning to go into that. If that's where, ma'am, I think the trend might be pointing us to. How we are going to deal with it, I'm not so sure. The last one, ma'am.
Before you go to the last one, I saw Honorable Fox, I don't know whether it's in order, you were raising up your hand.
One would never want to call a point of order, certainly I wasn't in the meeting. But I just want to request through you, Chair, we don't have time for academic responses here. I'm very interested in agriculture. I came from a farm, I want to return to land. However, what we are interested in here is, given all the challenges, what are you doing about it? That's what we are interested in. And Chair, I do think that the department needs now to stick to that. If they're not doing anything and they can't do anything, then let them say so. So we can get a clear picture. We are all reading the newspapers. We're all aware of the skills blue card. We don't need to be told for the fifth time. We want to know what you are doing. It's there. It's there. What are you doing? I mean, are we going to sit down in South Africa and just say, hey, put our hands up. If we did that, we wouldn't be liberated.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I thought that was my feeling, but I was waiting for signs from members. So I will, you know, in the interest of time, but I also want the Linda first to be able to respond. So can we just give agriculture the opportunity to complete and give Linda Fairs the opportunity to respond to all the questions? Then if we are satisfied, tell them we are satisfied. If we are not, tell them that we are not satisfied. Because I fully agree with what you have just said. So let's give DG the opportunity to deal with the last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've just highlighted one of the factors that we had to do in terms of retaining a deputy director at the level of a chief director. The second one that we had to do is to have professionals. Now we have two of these in the department. One is a vet and one is an IT specialist. All of them who have been at the deputy director level are retained now at the director level. But even against that, the threats are very real, and in some cases we are unable to keep the retention. I'm talking more for the moment on a monetary level. Structurally, we've worked very closely and together with the DPSA, as I've said, where we are splitting the system within the senior management, where you have professionals, and we are saying the professionals should not be linked to upward mobility that is based on shifting towards management post, but a professional, in other words, you could have as happens in university. I'm afraid this might appear academic, but it's essential to answer the question, ma'am, that if you have an economist, you then have a senior economist.
DJ, sorry, can I just interrupt you? What you are saying, you are teaching, you had already mentioned it. That's why the honorable member is coming. So, can I ask you not to repeat it, and if there's another question, because you said last and before you responded to the last one, I then took Honorable Fab's comment. So, the one on skills, on retention, let's accept it, the department doesn't have an answer, and move to the next one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last one I was saying I would request a clarification because it was say it had raised two questions, one on food security and the other one on the capacity, and closed on to that by saying what could we say we have achieved by the end of the financial year. So I sought a clarification so that we could be more accurate in our answer. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Just hold on that one and give Linda first the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask my colleagues to respond to these questions. DDG Anton van Staden, I think, will respond to all the issues that relate to HR, personnel, vacancy rate, staff retention, training, and the HR plan. And DDG Mahalmela is going to respond to all the questions that relate to the deeds offices. And my acting CFO will respond to the finance questions, and I will handle the rest. Can I ask Anton to come on?
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity. There are six areas identified in terms of the questions that I would like to respond to. The first question was, does the department have a human resource plan? The answer is that, yes, we have completed the human resource plan. However, the plan has not been finally approved. As mentioned in the main body of the presentation, the department has been in the process of developing a new departmental structure based on business process re-engineering, and that is now in its final stages. We hope that it will be completed in the next 2 months. And as soon as that has been approved, then the HR plan will be finalized. The HR plan is comprehensive, and it addresses all the areas of staff turnover, training, development, etc. The second area is the staff turnover rate. At present, the DLA staff turnover rate is 12.6%, which is the taken over a year period, the last financial year. The normal parameters for staff turnover is between 10 and 15%. So the 12.6% is not excessively high. However, in analyzing the 12.6% turnover further, the areas where we lose people is actually the front end of delivery, and that is where the concern comes in with this specific turnover rate. We do analyze the reasons why people are leaving. In terms of 50% of the people that we've lost, which is around 200 people, they have left the department for other public service departments, which is a significant challenge for human resource practitioners in government at the moment, because we do see an unfortunate job hopping where individuals will stay for 3, 4, 5, 6 months and then apply for a vacancy in another department. So that is a challenge that we are trying to deal with together with the Department of Public Service and Administration. In terms of the retention strategy, DLA has a formalized retention strategy in place. It has been formally approved and it is operational. However, we still find that we do lose a number of employees. So the question whether the retention strategy is effective, to some extent it is. But we would still like to see that the staff turnover rate is reduced to below 12%. In terms of the recruitment in land affairs, there is a focus program of recruitment which has been implemented during November of last year. The recruitment process has been totally re-engineered. We normally recruitment takes between 4 to 6 months. The time period has been reduced to an average 43 days, which is a significant improvement of what we used to have. We noticed the visible increase in recruitment where in the past we've averaged around 500 to 600 people a year, where in the 6 months of this year we've already been able to recruit 800 individuals as we've reported in the main presentation. So there's a significant increase in what we've done in the past. The record time for filling a post in DLA happened a few weeks ago, and that was a total of 19 days. So it is possible for us to do that. Yes, there is a very clear target in the strategic plan of land affairs in terms of the filling of vacancies. We want to achieve a vacancy rate of 10% or lower by 31 March 2008. So we basically have 6 months with a huge challenge that is lying ahead of us. But the department has already allocated additional resources for this purpose, and we are positive that we are going to make a very significant progress on this issue. The department is facing similar challenges to the Department of Agriculture when it comes to scarce skills. We also do find that there are, especially in the surveying, the town and regional planner, urban designer categories, industrial technician, which are highly technical and scarce skill at this point in time. We are participating in the DPSA initiatives around this issue, where at the moment we are together with them trying to develop new salary structures for these categories. And we also do participate in initiatives like GIPSA, etc. So there is perhaps the most significant contribution that we are making in terms of scarce skills is the graduate program that we have reported on in the main presentation. The purpose of the graduate project is exactly based on the issue of graduates that do not find employment. And we have initiated this program during the earlier part of this year. It kicked off in July. And we have recruited staff in three areas: deeds, land reform, and restitution. The question as to where we are advertising, in this specific instance, we advertised in most local newspapers as well as national papers, and we have been able to secure a significant pool of applications for this project. These individuals are contractually bound to the Department of Land Affairs for a 4-year period. And that has been done in an effort to make sure that we do not lose them within such a short period of time. These graduates are brought in at the lower structures in the department, where that's exactly the area where we find that the normal recruitment process does not provide us with sufficient skills to fill those positions. So we have decided that we are going to create our own skills pool in this area, and we are targeting around 400 graduates from now until March of next year. In terms of training initiatives, the department is having a number of very significant training initiatives where there's agreements in place with various universities, technicons, and colleges to provide skills that is scarce in the market. And the skills audit that has been referred to also will dovetail very nicely with these agreements that we have in place, because essentially the purpose of the skills audit is to identify where the skill shortages exist so that we can actually train in a focused manner so that we can create the skills that we need. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Dr. Mkhalimel.
Thank you, Chair. I will respond to the question relating to these offices and the constraints and experience also by the offices in terms of meeting the targets. I must say that in the smaller offices, we actually don't have any problem. The problem is experienced in bigger offices, which then actually process the deeds in large volume. And these would be the Pretoria office, the Johannesburg office, and the Pietermaritzburg office. But the major problem really is in the Pretoria office. And here we are trying to apply a multi-pronged strategy to deal with those backlogs. First and foremost, as a department, some few years back, we engaged on a program called Multinational, which meant we are decentralizing to ensure that we have got offices in all provinces, because the Pretoria office alone is servicing the Limpopo province and was also previously also servicing the Mpumalanga province. Last year, we opened an office in Mpumalanga in Nelspruit and is now operational. We are looking into opening another one in Limpopo at least by next year. So this will alleviate the stress on the Pretoria office. And also, the other project that we have engaged in, which was presented on the main presentation, was the fact that we're trying to grow our own trees using graduates. We have recruited those 21 graduates, and they are now actually deployed to the office to assist with those backlogs. And also, what we've done also is to try and shorten the turnaround times in terms of the amount of time we take to process the deeds in our offices. Last year, for example, with the other previous year, we had a target of 10 days turnaround time. We reduced that one to 6 days, and as I said before, in smaller offices, we've got no problem in meeting those targets, but it's just with the bigger offices. Where also, we have also stiffened the targets also for our land reform project, whereby we're saying we're going to process those within 5 days, and for RDP projects also, we process them in 5 days. But another bigger project that the department is engaged on to just assist this whole thing about turnaround time in our deed offices is just go electronic. We are calling this project eCadastra. We have consultants working who have just been analyzing the problem and designing for us an implementation strategy on how to go electronic, because we envisage also that going to 2010 and whatever and all the developments that are taking place in and around South Africa with the property boom, that there will be more properties that will need to be registered in a short time. So right now we're using a manual strategy, but we want to go electronic, and we've already embarked on that project. So this is how we want to alleviate the stress and problems that we're having presently in the office. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Kevin.
I'll respond to the first question on the savings from vacant posts and the impact on implementation. Yes, indeed, these savings have an impact on implementation, because what it means is that there are warm bodies that should have been there that we don't have. And this matter has been addressed also by Anton. We do make requirements from the savings to augment the funding shortages that we are experiencing. For instance, I just mentioned that with our adjustment estimates, we only received 250 million. Now, what this means is that we are going to look at the savings created by these vacant posts to see how we can fund the needs within restitution and other programs. The issue around workshops, the department has taken the comments made by the Minister of Finance seriously, and measures are going to be put in place to put controls without really stifling business. And perhaps we should also understand that the nature of our business requires us to interact and meet with various stakeholders. And also, inadvertently so, the vacancy rate will also cause us to have more workshops because there is more training and training that has to be done all the time. If you look at this project of bringing in graduates, it's a big project that will also lead to workshops being held to make sure that our interns, our graduates, our new officials receive the necessary training. These workshops, it could be, again, the costs are also attributable to the increase in the cost of accommodation, traveling, which is to a large extent as a result of the 2010 activities. But the department takes this thing very seriously, and we are going to look at how best can we put controls around this. The violence from the current budget to workshop, I'm not aware of the department moving funds for workshops. But then this is something that we can look at and report if we do have. So then it will be one of the unfunded mandates.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of the finalization of the claims, we have made an assessment of what we have done so far. We have settled about 93% of the claims, the 79,696 claims that were lodged. We are left with about 5,000 claims that we must resolve. There are rural claims. We have outlined what are the challenges in settling those outstanding claims. Those challenges are claims that are taken to the land claims court because they are disputes. You can't tell the judge to finish these claims now. Others are where there are disputes around traditional leaders. They fight about boundary disputes, about who is the rightful chief. The others are where they disagree on the land uses, whether the land should remain used as a sugarcane farm or should be livestock farming. So those land uses are some of the challenges. We have outlined these challenges to our political principals, including the president. And this is perhaps why he, in the State of the Nation address this year, talked about the complex claims that are outstanding. In our estimation, we have said about one-third of those claims we may not be able to finalize. But I think what we have said is that the other thing is that the cost of settling a claim has gone higher and higher. We used to buy land at 3,000 rand per hectare, but in the past 2 years we have bought land in Livubu, Limpopo, in Tenbush, as well as KZN, where there are sugarcane estates or deciduous fruit farms, where the cost of land has been coming at 55,000 rand per hectare, as opposed to the grazing land of about 3,000 rand per hectare. So it meant that over the past year in particular, we had about 35,000 rand per hectare that we had to buy land. So it means that if we're going to settle rural claims, particularly where the land that is claimed is of a commercial high value, the cost of settling that claim may be higher. We've made a sum that we may need a further 11 billion rand to settle the outstanding claims if most of them were coming from the sugarcane estates, for example, in KwaZulu-Natal, which is commonly the case. So we may need a further 11 billion than the amount that we have. Let me add that the Richter's Veld money, which was announced here, was about 250 million. This amount was far less than what we had asked. You'll recall that in our budget last year, we couldn't spend 1 billion, mainly because of post-settlement support issues, which are delaying. It takes a long time for development. Development is a process, it's not an event. So it takes a longer time to fast-track development. So we had an understanding that we would get this money when we asked for it, and Treasury really commended us last year when we said we are declaring the saving, we're not going to be able to use this money. And we hoped that this year they could give us 1.2 billion at least.
But they've given us 250 million for Richtersveld. But Richtersveld, the amount for Richtersveld is 303 million that should be paid as a result of restitution. This was a negotiated claim in court. We asked it out of court to negotiate the settlement. It could have cost the state in billions. You will recall the discussion where they wanted to be compensated for the loss of money from the mining since 1927. And that in court was being the debate that was argued by the lawyers. But out of negotiation, we've negotiated and we've agreed that the settlement from our side as a restitution could go to 303 million. And that is what is in our deed of settlement with them, which we took it to court as an order of court. This does not include the legal costs. So that amount will be paid by us as a restitution, and the legal costs related will also be paid by us as a restitution. But the amount that they may be asking could be for the could be linked to the recapitalization of Richtersveld of Alexco rather. So Alexco is not paying for that because the land claims are claims against the state, not against the landowners or the land users. That is why restitution of the state has to pay for the amount that she was outlined. I was responding to your question about Richtersveld, but also saying that we have not been paid enough money for Richtersveld in the revised budget, which affects us in terms of spending even for this year, especially for restitution, because with restitution our budget I was looking at our budget this time of the year we have just exceeded 70%. Of the restitution budget, and we are left with 1 billion, and that 1 billion, if we do not get an injection, it may actually be a challenge to get too much this year. So I think that is I'm responding to that question about the funds and so on. But for the future, that is what it means for restitution. And then for the issue of post settlement support, we have a plan which was looking at various models. How to support land reform beneficiaries. Other than CAST funding, which is administered through the Department of Agriculture in the various provinces, CAST is Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, which has got elements of supporting input, equipment, infrastructure, marketing, capacity building, on and off farm assistance to the land reform beneficiaries. Other than that money, which we see is a very small amount. We think that it should have been more than what we are currently giving. Each province on the average is getting roughly about 20 million to 30 million per province. And we think that it should have been more than that. When we go to provinces, they complain that this amount is not enough. So I'm saying that in terms of post-settlement support, the support is around cash. Is also we've got some grants or development grants that we provide to the land reform beneficiaries in order to make optimal use of the land that we are giving to them. I must admit that we do have a high failure rate on projects where we have given land to the people and the land is not used optimally. Hence, the need to strengthen the extension service, the support services. Our initiative is that this should be picked up at the level of the district municipalities, at the level of the provincial departments of agriculture. And that is where we think that we could have this, because in the departments, we don't have the capacity to be able to monitor projects at the project level. That can only be picked up at the level of the provinces. So we are working with the provincial departments. We do have a strategy, which is a joint strategy to us to see that this support is provided. We have given the provinces, for example, the list of all agricultural projects,
so that they can look at the project and see how, what kind of support they can give to those projects that have been resolved. Coming to the presidential priorities, we are required to settle the claims in this coming year, and we have indicated that we may need a review on that. But concerning the 30% target, it is very clear that it is very steep. If we are going to deliver all of the hectares within the shortest period of time, what we have presented here reflects the resource requirements for that, for meeting those targets. We may either have to actually revise the targets to be more realistic about what we can deliver to the people, particularly if we look at the additional post-government support requirements that go together with that. I think we need to reflect on that. The two provinces, the Honourable Member asked that there are 7 provinces instead of 9. The truth is that the Gauteng province and Northwest in restitution have been combined as one commission office because there were fewer claims in Northwest. So it was economically not viable to open each commission office, even though there are fewer land claims in that office. The same is true for Free State and Northern Cape. We combined them because in the Northern Cape there were fewer claims, so we combined those two offices. Then the issue of the communication strategy for land reform beneficiaries, we are always communicating with GCIS, and they assist us so that we can improve and align our communication strategies together with the strategy of GCIS in terms of communicating to the public about what government is doing about anything. So we do interact with GCIS on a regular basis on the communication strategy. We agree that we should improve on our communication. Some of the people in the LEM Summit complain that they are not aware about all the products that we as the department are providing to the people. So we agree that we need to improve on the communication strategy. On the question of chasing the number of hectares, I think this matter is an issue that I think we need to reflect on as a nation. We stated this 30% target, and it was revised because we started to say that we would achieve that 30% target in 1999. But as we approached 1999, it became clear that we could not. There are many more processes that are involved in this land reform program, which we need to deal with. Even the 4 million hectares that we have delivered to date, we still need to address the issues of the use of that land so that it does not contribute to the drop in agriculture. So I think we need to reflect on the targets. But what sits in our policy documents is that by 2014 we must have achieved this 30%. So I think we need to look at it and balance it with the reality of what has happened in the actual and reflect on this. I don't think we need to change the target of 30%. I think we need to look at it, but I think what is important is on the implementation of the strategies to achieve that. I think we need to reflect on that. I think I have covered all the questions, Chair.
Honorable Schneeman.
Chair, just back to the supply by agriculture in relation to their spending of 27 cents. The reply was given that in fact they spent 50% of their budget, but that they've only just received additional funds. Now, I'm not sure that I really buy that because they've asked for those additional funds. Those funds didn't just drop out. from somewhere. They've asked for this fund, so yes, it's true. Maybe the money has come through now, but the fact is that it's a higher amount of money than you think. So the question then was, are they going to be able to spend all of that money by the end of the financial year? Financial year being end of March. That was really the question. One fully aware that there was an additional fund, but they asked for that. It wasn't Minister Manuel who gave it. Just out of goodwill.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Member. I thought that Minister Manuel had come for the Christmas overnight by giving departments additional allocations and without even making the departments aware, because our understanding is that these are agreed to, there's a, you know, interaction with departments. If there's a revision upwards, it's because of engagement with the departments that this is what they have requested. That's why I saw that earlier on the National Treasury would respond. But anyway, we know that's the fact. It's a fact. And there's no way that the department can tell us that the money came and they didn't expect it. It's not correct. If it's correct, it means we've got to call National Treasury before us. And they must tell us why should they delay it, but like we have indicated, that is not the case. You know, because of, I've noted, I thought that members would, when I gave you, I thought you refer to questions that were not responded to, so that I can give the department a task over the weekend to do with those questions, because I'm not going to take further questions, but instead if there were some which are unanswered and I didn't tick the ones that have been answered satisfactorily, would give them to the department to respond to by Monday. But GCIS has not been called. I think for Monday, agriculture, because we must take it up with GCIS, he indicated that 250,000, each department was requested to contribute, and you contributed 250,000, which means that somehow GCIS did not budget for whatever it was going to use the money for, and then they had to come to the department. So can you give us reason or explain to us so that we can follow up with GCIS? Why should they ask money from you for what they did not budget for? Oh yes, Honorable Koleni, your concern about Northwest. I think the department, if you can, is it Land Affairs? Yes, no, Land Affairs, about the plane.
I think they've answered it.
No, you know what is important? Because they say that it's one office housing in Northwest. And what is important is we want to know Northwest. This is the number, Gauteng, this is the number, although it's one office. So that in your constituency in the Northwest, you can make a follow-up, you see. Those numbers are very important. Honorable Bob, before we close.
Just on the register itself, I must say I do appreciate the clarification of that response so far. But perhaps because I'm not in agriculture in terms of the committee, I don't have the same clear understanding as I should have. The confusion that I'm having is because when we have the special adjustment, and you will recall that, and I'm sure it was related to illegal, you know, the claim there to do with the whole Western stuff. Part of it was Alex Court and part of the land. Now, of course, you could mean
that we're talking about the wider issue. I assume the rest of South stretches from Port Nolan down or something. So perhaps you are referring to broader claims than what they are referring to. Because they were not simply referring to the mine, isn't it? So I wonder if we could just get that clarification. If we don't get it from yourself, maybe we could get a further clarification from public enterprises. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Member. I'm not going to take a response. Any response based on what you have just said. But what I will do for my co-chairperson closes, I would remind members that we are meeting Tuesday to look at the report at 10 o'clock and would want to express our appreciation from the portfolio committee for having been partnered with us. I've seen that there are some members from the committee. So we are very grateful for your presence, but I'm not closing. You are doing the closing. Thanks.
So, thanks, Chair. Perhaps on that note, just to indicate that it's been Friday, you know, some of the members had some challenges in terms of responding to the invitation, but thanks for inviting us to this meeting. Obviously, it's quite clear that there are some of the issues that we'll have to, you know, go much further as a portfolio committee on agriculture and some of them have been responded to centrally. Some of them, you know, they could still be answered much better. And we think that, especially in the instance of land affairs, we're meeting with them next week. We'll have to make follow-ups on some of the issues that you mentioned in this hearing. But also just to say to them that thanks for coming and we wish you good luck in terms of responding to the challenges that we face as a country, both in terms of agrarian and land reform. And for me, this committee should be considered as part. When we are robust, we are just doing our work. And it must be accepted like that. So thank you very much.